Tyler, it would be good if your level was a little.
This is going to be terrible.
Hey, oh yeah.
Six people on a podcast.
Higher, yeah. Or lower, Alex. Up or down?
It would be good if you were up a little, Tyler.
Okay, how's that better?
Halfway.
We gotta get Alex like halfway, the buttons from around the horn so you can mute people.
Hang on, let me talk to Alex.
Halfway between example, where
right now would be a perfect time.
Halfway between where you were. Yeah, yeah.
I'm good right now.
Perfect.
I'm gonna yell a lot. Should I turn it down a little? Give you a little.
In my mind, I'm hearing pony as Russ is getting undressed.
Yeah. Russ and his sweaty legs.
You want to sing? Oh,
no.
Sweaty legs Russ, we call him.
That's what they call me.
Tyler, start this fucking podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Dimebag Podcast. I'm Tyler Wilkinson, and we're joined today by Russ Steinberg.
I'm Russ Steinberg.
That's true. And Peter Bard.
I am someone else.
And Megan Bard.
I am a third person.
And Kevin Big Meech Meechum.
Je suis Russ Steinberg.
And our producer, Alex Cohen.
Hello, hello.
This is the first ever UConn podcast, which is cool.
Never happened before.
Nope. There's never been one.
Hole in the market.
There will never be another.
Nope.
I hope
and
not.
And the Dimebag Podcast, as always, is brought to you by J. Timothy's Tavern in Plainville, Connecticut. Visit jtimothys.com. All right, so let's start with men's basketball.
Speaking of things that suck, let's talk about men's basketball.
We have returned to badness, although I think I would make an argument that we never quite strayed far from badness, which is probably where we should talk, where we should start this, because there seems to be a narrative right now that the team has not improved from last year, or that, you know, the fundamental flaws of the program are still there. I mean, are you guys seeing improvement from last year?
I think the primary fundamental flaw we were running into is that the team wasn't really being coached in any discernible way last year. I mean, that end, we had bad players. We still don't have very good players.
I mean, they're definitely better than last year. Like, you can see it in the energy that they come with and that they're clearly more prepared for the games than they were last year. I think that's the biggest change for me is, like, the tempo and the fact that there is clearly a game plan every single game. Question of, I think the talent comes in is whether they can actually execute it or not.
Yeah, I mean, you could bring in the greatest coach in the world. If the players still suck, like, you're not going to win a lot of games. And that's, I think, a lot of people are still frustrated because of, you know, UConn just lost a fucking USF. But, I mean, you know...
I think that's the other thing is, like, that got people, like, unreasonably excited about the season was beating
right.
We didn't realize that Cuse also kind of sucks.
Yeah.
Cuse also kind of sucks. And I think UConn played better than its talent level in that game.
I also think there's 100%. Like a difference between being where people expect UConn to be, which, you know, I think is a consistent making the tournament every year team, to like where we were last year, which is like one of the worst teams. And, you know, now we're closer to being a tournament team, but we probably aren't actually there yet. But it's definitely just, like, and you look at the statistics, it's pretty obvious.
Just for quick reference, we're recording this on Friday night, so if you hear this after Saturday's game against UCF, we have no idea what happened in that yet. Just for reference.
We have an idea.
So
we have an idea what's gonna happen there.
So there's like
I have a guess.
There's some statistics that that clearly show the differences between this year's team and last year's team. And somebody else can talk to those because I don't have them in front of me. But the biggest thing that's easy to see is that we have actually blown several teams out this year.
Uh-huh.
And Syracuse may suck, but we played really well against them. So I think the thing is, like, we saw flashes of what the team might be capable of under Hurley. And maybe if he had all these players from the time they started their development, we'd be much happier with how they're performing right now. I've seen more than enough with Hurley's coaching to know that this team is different, it's better, and the program is in good hands as long as he is given patience and time to get the right players in and to work with players and develop them.
Sorry, I have the stats in front of me that that Banner brought up yesterday. Offensive efficiency, 2018, they were 171 in the country. This year, they're 107. 2018 defensive efficiency, 178. This year, they're 99. And then the biggest one is tempo, 236 last year and 21 this year. So at the very least, they are so much more watchable. Usually.
You know what I keep coming back to, too, is like, and I think this is, you know, one tenth of the reason why, like, I just don't feel the need to write about this team very often is they're very consistent. Like, and I mean, it's that's turning up in a bad way just because they're not very good. Like, they're not that talented, but they are consistent. Like, right. The things that they do poorly almost every game. And the result is almost wholly dependent on who the opponent is. In the USF game,
there you go.
When the directional Florida game,
you know what? They don't deserve to be distinguished from each other.
I know. They're the same schools. Thing. But basically, UConn's talent level is approximately USF's at the moment. And they have to play an abnormally good game like they did against Syracuse to beat a more talented team. But to your point earlier, Alex, I think what we've seen is they're consistent enough that when they have a big talent advantage against shitty teams, they can blow them out of the water. And they're consistently, you know, flawed enough that it's going to be a struggle against teams with equivalent players.
I want to add to that because I know people, just based on what I've seen on Twitter, are going to get mad at you saying that we're basically equivalent to USF. Yeah. Our guards are a lot better than USF's. Our post play is much worse.
That's true, but we can get more into this later too. But the guards themselves are consistently flawed. I mean, the thing is,
well, it's college basketball. If they weren't flawed, they wouldn't be there.
Sure, but where I'm going with this is you kind of like a pretty easy team to play against, even with the improvements that Hurley has brought to the system, because they've shown that they're still a poor shooting team. To your point, they can count on absolutely nothing from their front court. They're not a great rebounding team. And if they can manage to frustrate and take Jalen Adams out of the game or force him to the perimeter, like, we're a really easy team to guard, especially if the other team's not committing turnovers, which we can also talk about more too. But like, I don't think the advantage in the backcourt is as big as the raw talent level would seem, just because overall other teams are having a pretty easy time relatively just taking that strength away from UConn so far.
So I took the liberty of going through the last several years on Sports Reference, and they have for the rosters going back to the 2000 season all of the RSCI top 100 guys on each roster. And each of the last 2 years, we've had three such guys. This year, it's Jalen, Alterik, and Sid. Last year, it was Jalen, Alterik, and Larrier.
Wasn't Polly one?
Polly was not top 100, no.
Oh, I thought he was, like, in the 90s.
No, I think he was, like, 160-ish on 247, but I don't remember.
Okay.
But prior to that, I mean, you go to 2017, and we had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 such guys. Purvis, Adams, Gilbert, Larrier, Durham, Enoch, Jackson, and Facey. And most of the years going up, you know, 6, 5, 6, 5, like most years, there were at least 5 or 6 such guys. Now we have 3, and one of them is not playing up to, I guess, what our expectations were for him this year. And it's, you know, if they have a bad night, they're going to lose to pretty much anybody.
And part of the reason for that has got to be, too, that Hurley had to put a class together for this year that had to contain what
Hurley didn't reasonably have any time to recruit, like, real talent.
But he had to bring it. He had to bring in guys that could play the basketball he wants to play, which doesn't necessarily mean they're good players. They would be his third, fourth, fifth choice if he was recruiting them from the start. They just had to fit the mold. Like, you can see that with Terrence Smith. That he can play the basketball that Hurley wants to play, but he's just not good enough for our level. Ideally, Hurley would be recruiting the 1 to 2 stars better version of Terrence Smith.
The starters at Duquesne.
I think the situation, Smith, you know, we kind of talked about this before, but he got the guys he got because those are the guys he could get quickly.
Right.
There were, well, it obviously paid dividends, because I think the important thing to remember is the three guys he's got committed to come in, and one who may or may not be hanging around this semester, are the kind of guys that would be on your list.
Yeah, those guys. Gaffney, I don't think is, but
I think he's like he's on the bubble. I think at the moment
he might end up there.
Booknight, yeah, he might end up there, but Booknight and Akook definitely are. Kofi Cockburn is.
Yeah.
You know,
and the recruiting class is, you know. It's hard to watch. Like, this is a hard transitional phase to be in, because he's got the guys that Kevin Ollie recruited, and, like, that was obviously a fraud process. He's got the guys that Kevin Ollie was developing. That was obviously a really flawed process. And now he's also trying to fit them into his style, which is very different than the style they were playing. So it's, like, a lot of things going on at once. And, like, yeah, it would be nice if Jalen showed up for 40 minutes a game, and he really hasn't. And that's, you know, that's the thing that Hurley was talking about, is do you invest in the rest of the season to try and get to a postseason, or do you acknowledge that, like, this is a 2-3-4 year rebuilding process, and maybe we should be planning long term and playing the younger guys?
Yeah, I mean, this is a lot like the first year of the Bob Diaco era before the rebirth. When he came in and they won 2 games. So, you know, it was frustrating at the time, but you have to, you know, be looking more towards the future.
When we can have a ugly first round loss to Marshall.
to Megan's point, though, and not to spend too much time killing Kevin Ollie on this podcast, because that's sort of pointless, and there's 50 hypothetical episodes of a non-existent UConn podcast. But... like, an underrated flaw of Ollie's was roster construction.
Underrated flaw.
Don't you think? I mean...
that's just an interesting term.
Like, if you look at...
it was a major flaw, but it wasn't the one that people called out the most.
I mean, the one that was the most...
We did.
But we're smart. No one else is smart.
Right. Well, but, like, I think people are looking, and they're, you know, there's a lot of talk on recruiting. There's a lot of talk on whatever happened where he lost all those transfers after, you know, all those things. But, I mean... as we've talked about, the entire, like, recruiting class where he just had random, like, 6'8 guys everywhere, like, he never seemed to find a way to build a full roster. And I think Hurley is living with a lot of those consequences right now. And I think it's also really obvious the players that Ollie brought in that Hurley just does not care about.
He is not an Isaiah Whaley fan.
When you're getting indefinitely suspended all the time, like, you know, you're probably not coming, you know, you're probably not on the highly favored list. But, or even like when you get a double double against Iowa and then rack up 0 minutes for the next like 8 games.
Yeah, that's been a wild one. Like, what happened with Cobb? He was getting a lot of playing time, doing some things, and all of a sudden, dead silence.
Well, I've got good news for you about Cobb. He's going to be playing a lot the rest of the season.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about that. So news today that Kasum Yakwe is probably almost certainly out for the season with a fractured foot. I actually wanted to go on something Hurley said today that some of the beat guys wrote about. I think I read it most recently in Dave Borges' column, but basically Hurley was like, well, we're at the point where we have to decide whether we go for it or whether we just play a bunch of young guys to develop them. And I read it and I was just so confused. I was like, I don't even know what that means at this point.
Yeah, so two things about that. Number one, this isn't like baseball where...
pulling up from AAA,
Like, this isn't a point where you go, well, we could trade our veterans and get some good prospects and, like, you know, in a couple of years have a really good team. That's not how this works. So that's the first thing.
Fuck out of Jalen right now.
Yes.
Well, that's the thing. That's what I think he's doing.
Talking about.
The quote is, hey, dickhead, get your shit together or I'm just going to play Brendan.
Right. But I don't buy that.
What does that look like? Like, Jalen's not going to get benched.
He's not going to get benched, but you might mouth off a little bit in the press to motivate him because he's not motivated.
He's played like shit in the last 2 games. He's played like absolute fucking garbage for the last at least 2 full games. Like, let's be real about this. Like, and he had 23 points the last game, but
it was an ugly 23 points.
His offensive rating on KenPom for that game was 96. 100 is average.
Cool. Yeah.
I mean, honestly, for a guy who made a big deal out of making a decision as to whether or not he was going to come back, you would think that making the decision to come back would mean that he's going to go all out and try to, like, we had this fantasy of him saying, "Oh, okay, I want to have a memorable season like a UConn guard," and it's a little frustrating to watch someone be like not motivated.
I don't know if it's motivation so much. I just don't know if Jalen is that guy. I think, like, you look at his career numbers, he's never been like a super efficient, you know, superstar point guard that you need if he's going to be, you know, your main alpha dog on this team. Like,
what are the elements that are missing? Because it's not like he doesn't, you know, he misses too many shots. He's leading the team in attempts. He's shooting 52% from the floor.
He turns the ball over too much. He doesn't get fouled. He doesn't get fouled. He's not a great 3-point shooter. I think those are the three things.
You know what? And I would love to see a breakdown of, like, a detailed analysis of his field goal attempts, I think would be really telling. I mean, anecdotally, he disappears for long stretches of the time and feels like he really has a tendency to turn it on when the game, like when UConn needs to get back into a game that they're out of because he didn't want to play. That's anecdotally, but that's how I interpret it.
They let a lead slip away. They had a 13-point lead and let it slip away, and then the game was gone and they couldn't get it back. And it does feel like that happens a lot, you know, because I think that was one of the other things I noticed about a different from last year is they do come out a lot stronger than they have, but it seems like they have a hard time sustaining the energy level that they need to play at because, again, they don't have the talent.
And on top of that, the mistakes tend to snowball.
Yeah.
So that, like, that run that Florida State made towards the end of the first half in that game, like, that could have ended at halftime and not rolled over into the second half and the game got completely away. And it was like, it was the same thing. And the Iowa game was right out of the gate. But like in the Villanova game early in the second half, that got away really fast. Things have gotten out of hand so fast. And I think that's maybe what surprised me a little bit, especially just after seeing the kind of difference in the attitude and the approach over the first few games of the season.
You know, I almost wonder, especially for somebody like Adams, how much of that is just residual. You get used to being on shitty teams and you develop a mentality of like, cause you think about, you know, when he was in high school, he was the alpha player on, where was he? Brewster?
Brewster. Yeah. What a great Brewster team.
There were seven high major guys, including Donovan Mitchell, and Adams was the primary ball handler and he was the leading scorer and he was the star of that team. Then he comes to UConn. He has 1 year with talented guys and then the talent level collapses and the team falls apart.
Mm-hmm. And he basically had to be that creator for 2 years because there was no one else who could even, like, attempt to shoot the ball or handle the ball.
Yeah, and Gilbert always getting hurt and all the big guys not developing.
Right.
And I think you have to think that his development was hampered by that.
Back to the Hurley comment about going young and after this conversation, like, I think it's probably all just related. I think you're right that he's probably signaling to Jalen and Gilbert, like, I know you guys are used to losing and you're going to, like, I feel like he's just trying to prevent them from boosting their draft stock on the way out the door. Like, you know, he just doesn't want the season to decelerate into that. And I think he's putting a marker down saying, I'll just play fucking Brandon Adams. You know what I mean?
I think Gilbert's also been kind of disappointing. So we spent a lot of time talking about Jalen, and I think we all were hoping that if Gilbert stayed healthy, which he appears to be, that he would have more of an impact. And he hasn't really. You know, he's had some pretty mediocre efforts. His shot looks not great. And, you know, I think if he was bringing more, like, would that take some of the pressure off of Jalen? Like, and I don't know, like, I'm not, you know, putting it all on him, but it does seem like there's enough of that to spread around, except to Christian Vitale, who shows up for 100% of every game.
Gilbert is the team's leading 3-point shooter at the moment.
What's he shooting from two?
40%.
40%. He's higher from three than two.
That's not great. What's, I mean, 40, 42% is great.
It's also like a super streaky 42%. But I mean,
what does that mean?
He hits 7 one game and none the next, like instead of just 3 every game.
He also started something like 9 for 13. So he's. Uh-huh.
But he's got to be so tired already. Like that's the. I don't know. Like there's as long as he can stay on the court, there's nothing Gilbert can do this season that will disappoint me at this point. You know what I mean? Especially, I mean, I was always, I think, the low person on expectations for this team amongst our group, but worse than Meech, which is amazing. But, you know, at this point, I feel like are we all in agreement that basically tournament hopes are a fantasy?
I think that was true
a couple weeks ago.
We could get hot and win the conference tournament, but we're not getting in as an at-large.
That's the thing. That's why I was a little disappointed in Hurley's comments, if you take them for what they were, because I like the piece of hope that I was clinging to was that Hurley was a good enough coach to get this team to the point where winning 3 games in the AAC tournament and getting in that way was actually realistic, even if they weren't going to be a viable at-large team.
Yeah, because it seemed like there was a lot of improvement when the season started. He was like, oh, they really are a lot better than last year. And like, maybe that trajectory would continue over the course of the season.
So that by the end, I mean, like,
pretty decent, but I don't think that's really what's happening.
I mean, for what it's worth, some really, really bad UConn teams were pretty close to doing that very same thing in the last couple of years.
Right.
So,
it's true.
You know, could happen, but
could happen.
I guess.
Like, how bad did we get about that 2014 team when it looked shitty after that Louisville game?
But that was still a 24-win team that had won, that was ranked at the top 15 at some point. This is a little bit different.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, I'm not talking about winning a national championship. It's just a matter of, like, could they get hot? I could see it happening that Jalen has a hot few games and they win the conference tournament and they make the tournament. But
yeah, I mean, crazy things could happen, too. I mean, all it would take is a nice upset that knocked Cincinnati or Houston out before.
There's nobody unbeatable in this league.
No.
There's no team that has to get knocked out. There's no SMU from 2015.
No. But it'll take a little
while. I think Cincinnati might be that team. Maybe Houston.
I mean, it'll take a little luck. I don't think UConn's just going to flat out play and beat better teams and get their way in. Like, if that were to happen, I think some weird thing would also have to accompany that. Do you
I would kind of last year. I couldn't. I just was like, fuck this. I'm not watching this. I'm just gonna be depressed.
Yeah, no, I can watch games even when they lose. They're entertaining.
Watching games was a chore last year. Like, didn't look forward to it. And the worst part was when they lost, it didn't bother me. I was just numb to it. Like,
it was just the general feeling of malaise that surrounded us.
Personally, I'm still in that malaise, but at least I can see a light at the end of the tunnel. Like, by the end of the USF game, I wasn't even upset. I was just like, all right.
Oh, I turned it off.
I was upset. I was actually really bothered by that game.
I was mad at that.
I was not.
And I was glad that I was bothered because I felt something again.
Yeah, well, no, that's good.
The other thing, too, is I think you were bothered by that game because the standard has indeed been raised this season based on the performances we've seen. Like, the thing that people get caught up in is they can't distinguish between performance and results. And, like, when you're trying to intelligently talk about any sport, you have to be able to distinguish between the performance and the results. So, like, while the results may not be that much different, even though they are because of the blowouts, the performance is just clearly better to anyone with eyes. It's just better. Even in that USF game, like, while it may have made us think about last year, there's still differences. There's still things that are better.
They started the game well instead of...
Last year's team would never have gone up 13.
They would have been down 13, and they would have gotten it to 6, and then they would have lost by 15.
Right. Yes. I think we're probably good on men's basketball. Let's pivot.
Okay. Who's that?
Who could that be?
Hello? Hello? Is anybody here?
Oh, my God.
He's back.
He's back. Very, very much fan favorite. David Benedict Cumberbatch.
David, are you here to tell us about the fine offerings of J. Timothy's Tavern in Plainville, Connecticut?
I am. You know, it's been a while, and in fact, no UConn podcasts have existed before, so this is actually my first time. I'm very excited to tell you all about the beer list.
This is just like the Doctor Who reboot.
Oh, so I should be talking then.
In England, we of course call it Sir Who.
That joke is too fucking classy for this podcast. So wait, we all know you can eat as much chicken as humanly possible. You could eat a station wagon full of chicken at J. Timothy's Tavern, but you're suggesting people also indulge in their alcoholic tendencies and drink pints of ale there?
I think it'd be only proper.
Okay. Tell me more.
I would personally recommend the chocolate truffle stout. For just $6, you get a sweet stout made in collaboration with Connecticut's favorite chocolatier, Munson's Chocolate.
Oh, I would recommend that.
That's my pride of, pride of Fulton, Connecticut.
That's right.
It is? Absolutely.
Yeah.
What else could possibly...
Literally nothing good has ever come out of Bolton, Connecticut.
Russ, did we drink that beer?
Yes, we did. We drank it with
delicious
beer.
It's extremely
delicious.
Yeah.
Shout out to
What up, Sue?
And it's 7.1 alcohol by volume. It will get you proper chuffed by the time that the game tips off on Saturday morning.
Sure will.
Be the match.
Before the match, yes, of course. I'm sorry, I'm a little distracted. I'm watching the Australians get dominated by India in cricket right now.
That's not a bit, though. He actually is.
That's not part of it. That's not part of it.
It's just good to see those criminals get defeated by the Indians.
Dave, you're going to have to teach me about cricket at some point.
It's a wonderful game. It's a lot like your baseball, but, you know, there's not as much action.
Definitely, that's what I think when I think about baseball is, can we slow this down a little bit?
Well, it's approximately the same amount of action, but spread out over 5 days.
Perfect. Sounds amazing.
It's a sport that is captured.
7-time cricket champion with hundreds of millions of dollars in the bank who refuse to spend it because their owners are diaper-clad, crybaby Trump supporters.
David Benedict Cumberbatch needs to do like a riff on the Joe Buck tweet for a cricket match that goes on for like 3 years or something. Yeah.
Welcome to the 476th wicket.
Well, welcome to the 485th over. Oh yes. Oh Lord. Oh my. Terrific. Well done. Oh, outstanding.
Okay. So the women lost. So did rape defender Kim Mulkey and the Baylor Bears. Where's the lie?
Where's the lie? There is no
where's
lie.
Where's the lie?
It's not later if it's true.
I'm very smart and predicted the loss before the game.
You did this for both losses.
I did. I know. I really should stop predicting things.
Or predict some good stuff.
Quite concerned pregame. I was nervous about the matchup. With the size that Baylor brought.
Yeah. As I said to you guys before the game, it's like, I don't like losing to Baylor because they're Rape University. Mm-hmm. And they deserve to pay dearly. They shouldn't even be in a university anymore.
Nope.
But, like, I don't think losing's going to be that bad for them.
I think overall, no. But I'm going to make us all mad again by reminding everyone that this team is supposed to have Ezra Stevens on it.
Yeah, that made me really mad last night when you said that.
Yeah, I'm still mad about it. Honestly, I'm still mad about it. Like, every time I think about it, I'm like, God damn it. That's, like, exactly what this team needs.
I don't think they were that surprised.
I think they were pretty surprised.
I wasn't that surprised, and they're smarter than I am, so.
Well, I mean, at the end, that's not what we heard. I don't know what to tell you, man. That was, they were kind of like, oh, well, good for her, you know. But it was not expected as they were constructing their roster, certainly.
Well, I guess I feel like it should have been to some degree. It should have been something that they were aware of as a possibility.
Well, I mean, maybe they were. And, you know, they did bring in, like, Olivia. I can never say her last name right. But, I mean, having a senior in that position is obviously going to be a very different situation.
I agree. And I think that she was the contingency plan. But that's, I guess, why I feel like I'm not surprised. I don't think they're shocked. I think anytime a player's graduating and obviously is going to be a high draft pick, why would you stay?
I mean, there's only a couple of women have ever done it. So it's still not like...
I think it's going to be more common. I think for players who are graduating,
you're going to see more. It's certainly not protocol the way it is in the men's game. And she also had the whole injury component as well.
Yeah, but I mean, they both missed a year.
Right, but she missed a year because she couldn't stay healthy. So it kind of made more sense for her to get her money while she could, get her playing time in while she could.
I mean, I guess I don't really see... Once somebody's like going to get drafted and you're graduating... I think most players in that situation going forward will probably go. Or at least very many will.
Back to the game. Has your expectation changed now? Did that show something to you? Or did we just basically see the worst case scenario of the flaws we already knew they had?
I mean, they also looked awful. They missed a lot of open shots, a lot of bunnies.
Like, I don't think that they're that bad at shooting. I think
29% from the floor is ridiculous. There was a lot of like right up by the rim, on the rim, off the rim layups that just like didn't fall. It was awful. It was a bad night.
Yeah, I think they're good enough to beat the really good teams despite their deficiencies, which is clearly their lack of size and length that Baylor exploited. They just had an awful shooting game. And
they shot like their average shooting percentage if they would have won last
year. Yes, that is what I was about to say.
It's weird to me that UConn is so devoid of depth, and that seems to have been true for like 5 years.
Yeah, it's just never been a problem.
He's only ever really gone.
I think it has been a problem the last 2 years.
I mean, they lost one game each year.
Yeah, and they were undefeated until the Final Four.
But
you're not going to tell if they'd been better. They were the best team in the country. Not being able to steamroll through the season undefeated.
And they lost on two buzzer beaters.
Okay, yeah, here's the thing, though. We saw against Baylor, when you have a bunch of people who go cold and you're UConn, you score like 58 points. Like,
yes, it was a problem.
Having another human on the bench who might make shots that night is good.
Yeah. I mean, he brought in like Lexi Gordon. He brought in Kamuli, Kamara.
For the first time since she arrived at UConn, I think.
She hadn't played since before Thanksgiving. Like, she had not gotten on the court in a while. And they did get some minutes. I think he was trying to teach Kristen Williams a little lesson for a hot minute. And to be fair, he pulled her, gave Lexi some minutes. She came back in and hit back-to-back threes. So, I don't know.
Yeah, the problem for me is more that Lexi Gordon is not very good.
She's not great. She's okay. She's fine. She's like, whatever.
When Sanaya Chong is the best bench player UConn's had in like 4 years.
Well, this is the problem with him not using his bench is... Espinoza Hunter should be on this team.
Yeah.
And she could play. But he keeps just like great talented players and he buries them on the bench because they're not as good as his four-time All-American starter. You still got to get him some minutes. You still got to rotate, especially when you're winning every game by 50 points.
And especially when you have top recruits like Megan Walker and Nelson Adoba, because Adoba looks terrible at the moment. Like, she's looked really bad.
And what do you want to bet?
Number five recruit in the country. Like, you have to play her. Like, that's how they get better. And I feel like Megan Walker,
she's been getting minutes. She's just super foul prone.
It's like, a lot of minutes, but I feel like she's not as good as she should be because she didn't get enough time last year, is my point. Like,
I'm talking about Nelson Adoda. Yeah. Nelson Adoda is getting as many minutes as she can get right now because she fouls constantly. That's not an issue with her. I don't think, it certainly could be with Megan Walker from last year, but. Also, she looks pretty, like, she's missing a lot of shots. Her shot is a straight line drive right now. I don't know what happened, but, like, the first few games of this season, she was looking pretty improved. And the last few, she's, like, pretty bad. Yeah, I'm a little nervous coming into next year. We have, like, nobody coming in next year. And
he's going to have to get somebody.
Collier and Samuelson. Like, we're going to be kind of bad next year, I think.
Who wants to see Molly Bent play 25 minutes a game?
I'm scared by next.
All right, everybody, thanks for listening to the Dimebag Podcast. Until next time.
I interrupted you right now.
We'll see you next time for the first ever edition of the Dimebag. He sold a lot of cocaine, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. Whomst among us?